Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Agree with everything he says, and you'll get along fine. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We'll have Jonah Carey in studio from 11 to 12. He is the author of Up, Up, and Away. He'll be doing a sit-down tonight at Opera Bob's. And he'll join us in studio. And we'll take your calls from 11 to 12. Nothing but baseball from 11 to 12. John Gibbons, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, has indicated that the Jays will set their 25-man roster tomorrow before they leave for their exhibition games in Montreal against the Cincinnati Reds. I think most of us could probably sit down right now and put together that roster. There are still some jobs open. Shai Davidi is our MLB insider in Sportsnet. Dossier. Shai Davidi joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Mr. Davidi, almost ready to get out of Dunedin again?
Yeah, I think everybody is. It's, you know how it is. It's that buildup for the month and change, and at this point, everybody's sick of everything and they just wanted to start for real. And really, at this, from this point on, nothing but bad things can happen. So
yes.
I think everybody's chomping at the bit to get out of here and get it started for real.
Shai, what are the jobs that are open right now?
Well, I really think it's pretty much down to Todd Redman and Liam Hendricks for the second long man in the bullpen, but with Marco Estrada. Although, you know, John Gibbons yesterday said it, or described the first base job still a little bit cluttered. You know, I mean, Justin Smoke is in all likelihood going to be the guy, but I think they really want to make sure that they're giving, you know, Derek Barton full consideration, because there are some people who really like the way he's performed this spring. And I think there's an element of lip service, too, to Dion Vecchio, who's here on a minor league contract, but, you know, hasn't shown particularly well at this point.
I find it hard to believe that Todd Redman won't make this team.
Yeah, and I think they're probably going to, they're probably going to go that way in the end, but they really like Liam Hendricks, and they like what he can bring in a spot start situation. And one thing I really expect to see the Blue Jays do, I don't know often, but at least a handful of times this year, is for them to try to sneak someone up to make a start so they can push back and give some extra rest to Sanchez, Norris, and maybe Hutcherson on occasion.
Yeah.
That's something that they did last year. They really liked it. And I think they're going to have to do that, just based on the past workload of Sanchez and Norris.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I know that the Seattle Mariners have very openly said that essentially they're looking at a six-man rotation and that that is what they're going to be doing. They're going to be shuttling guys up and down to kind of give a little bit of breathing room to some of their starting pitchers. I think you're going to see more and more teams do that. I think, Shai, I think a lot of teams do that anyhow. They just sort of, they don't talk about it, you know, like
right.
Baltimore did that a couple of years ago. Effectively, they would run guys back and forth from AAA, and they just don't talk about it. Right.
Right. And, but to me, what's really happening, Jeff, is that, you know, there was that movement to coddle pitchers,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, 20%, 30 inning bumps year over year and things like that. And really, you just look at the spate of young pitchers, especially who've undergone Tommy John, like certainly some of the younger guys, you know, Matt Harvey, Matt Moore, Jose Fernandez. I mean, coddling guys isn't necessarily a guarantee that they're going to avoid arm injury.
Right.
So teams are really trying to experiment with different things. and trying to find, you know, different ways to solve this problem, because really the industry conventions are proven to not work.
Yeah, and
if you keep doing the same thing over and over, and sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
Same thing over again. It's just, you know, you're banging your head against the wall. That's not smart either.
And I was going to say, you had an interesting interview with Alex Anthopoulos on the website on sportsnet.ca earlier this week, where he talked about that very fact that look, what we're doing as an industry, you know, we've kind of erred on the side of caution and it hasn't worked. So maybe it's time to start taking a look at other ways of handling pitchers, at other ways. And I think what we're talking about, Shy, more than anything else, we're talking about ways of advancing pitchers to the majors more than anything else. That's what we're talking about.
Right. And then not only advancing, but as they advance, managing the workload in a way that it advances and not really laying a cookie cutter mm-hmm. type of approach to each pitcher, right? Mm-hmm. Because the way you treat Mark Burley has got to be different than the way you treat Aaron Sanchez, because the deliveries are different, the body types are different, the backgrounds are different, the physical toll that each exerts on themselves is different. So to say, hey, you know, we're both following this plan and this should not blow a guy out, well, I mean, that doesn't make sense. So, you know, it's going to be interesting, because I think a lot of people read that piece and just thought, oh, the Blue Jays are throwing caution to the wind. They're just going to, like, mm-hmm. you know, run them out there until they blow up. And it's far from that. I think the nuanced approach that they're going to take, I think a lot of teams are starting to take as well, not just them, is a lot more layered and complicated and not as easily digestible.
Shai, what happens at catcher? I mean, we know that obviously Russ Martin's the number one guy. He's going to be the opening day starter, we think. What happens at catcher, though, between Josh Tolley and DeAndre Navarro? Are they both on the team?
I think it's DeAndre Navarro's the backup and Josh Tolley at Triple A. I just can't see how they construct the roster in a sensible way beyond that. And, you know, one thing that they've decided is that, you know, they really like DeAndre Navarro catching Mark Burley. I mean, that was a pairing that worked really, really well together last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're thinking that if DeAndre Navarro is going to be on the team, that they might as well leverage that.
Right.
And, you know, that'll be, you know, Russ Martin's quote-unquote rest day. So, you know, he can clearly catch R.A. Dickey. Can he catch him as well as Josh Tolley? Not yet, but we're talking about one of the best defensive receivers in the game. He's going to figure it out pretty quickly. And really, the team is better this way. And you know what? I think the Blue Jays, deep down, like DeAndre Navarro on this team as a backup. If they have an opportunity to trade him to be a starter somewhere, they will, out of respect to him. But that opportunity isn't there right now. And as long as that's the case, I mean, he makes his team better. He can do a lot of different things. You know, you're far better protected in case of a Russ Martin injury with Navarro than you are with Tolley. So I think in a lot of ways, it's not ideal, but it's got the potential to work out well for this team.
And, Shai, you know, I've thought all along that when it comes to dealing DeAndre Navarro, he has more value to the Blue Jays with the Blue Jays than he does in the trade market. I really believe that.
Yeah, I think that's fair, unless another team is going to look at him as a starter. And if another team is going to look at him as a starter, they're going to have to, you know, for the Blue Jays to make the deal, they're going to have to give up a starter type of starter type of return for him. So that's the only way that, you know, it makes sense for the Blue Jays to deal mm-hmm. him, if it really makes them better. And if Navarro gets what he wants, and that's an opportunity to start. And as of now, that doesn't exist. That could very well open up, you know, once the season gets going and there's an injury and the team decides that it's got to make a move. But as of right now, that opportunity doesn't exist for him.
Hey, Shai, this story that emerged this weekend that Alex Anthopoulos had gone to see the Phillies play and people making the jump that it was to go and see Jonathan Papelbon pitch, because I gather Papelbon was used early in the game because of a threat of rain. I mean, obviously got a lot of traction, certainly in the Philadelphia area media. I know Mike Wilner tweeted out the same thing. I was told that, you know, don't read anything into it. The reason Alex was there was not necessarily to see Jonathan Papelbon. As someone told me, we've seen Jonathan Papelbon. We know what he's like, and more to the point, we know how much he gets paid.
Right.
What's your reading of that situation?
I mean, to go further, I even heard that, you know, he might have actually purposely come late to avoid seeing Jonathan Papelbon. So,
okay. Yeah.
I mean, you know, just so that people wouldn't make that link. So I would say that the story there continues to be the story that it's been, is that the Phillies are looking to try to create a market. And, you know, I heard some garbage yesterday about, you know, the Blue Jays trying to make a deal for both him and Ryan Howard, and nothing could be further from the truth at this point. And, you know, I think the Blue Jays have gotten to the point with the team that they have, and they're going to run with them. What they'd like more than anything is to get a starting pitcher with some options that mm-hmm. they could park at AAA Buffalo and leave them there for an opportunity. That's what they'd like most. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to find that, but if you're looking at this team and what they really need to add right now, it's some depth in starting pitchers. That is the big, big void. And you know, that's why someone like Randy Wolf, and I know a lot of people are rolling their eyes, you know, someone like Randy Wolf could be really important, because the Blue Jays, with the Stroman injury and having emptied out the upper levels of their farm system, really don't have an obvious number six for the rotation right now.
What would the rotation look like in Buffalo?
At this point, it's going to be Randy Wolf, Jeff Francis, Andrew Albers, and then there's a handful of candidates, Juan Pablo Aramis, Austin Bibb-Dirks. It's not the prettiest picture right now. And, mm-hmm. I mean, basically the upper level prospects are in the big leagues. You know,
right.
Roberto Osuna might have been that next starter coming up, but he's going to be in the bullpen. And I don't think the way things are shaping up right now, at least, that the Blue Jays would look at, you know, extending him and pulling him into the rotation if mm-hmm. there was a need. I think Marco Estrada would be the next guy, and the Blue Jays could always do that with Todd Redmond or
sure.
Liam Hendricks as well. But you know, that depth falls off rather quickly. And they don't have what they had last year when Marcus Stroman was at Buffalo and basically the countdown was on until he was going to arrive at the big leagues. You know, that might have been the case if Stroman doesn't get hurt. Maybe Norris ends up starting the season there. But the way things stand right now, it's everyone's here, and it's pretty thin at AAA Buffalo.
And Shai, my understanding of the situation is that the Blue Jays have effectively decided that they are going to break camp with Osuna and Castro in the bullpen, and that once they do that, they are not going to entertain any thoughts of moving either of them into a starting role for the entire season. That if they break with the bullpen, they're going to be in the bullpen this year. And that's my understanding. I don't know. Are you hearing anything different? That's kind of what I've been told.
Yeah, that's my sense too. You know, you always wonder, I mean, sometimes, you know, necessity can be the mother of all invention, and you know, if the season dictates that you have to do that, maybe you change your mind. But the way that they're, you know, with how few innings both guys have under their belts over their minor league career, that to try to change midstream during the season, that's going to be awfully difficult for them. So I would expect that to be the case, that all indications that's the current plan. But you know as well as I, things are always subject to change.
Shai, I'm going to go, I'm going to let you go and catch couple hours of sunshine. When are you heading back here?
After Wednesday night, after the finale in Fort Myers. So a few of us are heading home right after the game there, and then we'll get ready for the season.
Perfect, man. We'll see you here. Good work.
Thanks, pal. Take care.
Shai Davidi, our MLB insider on sportsnet.ca. And I Shai stuff has been great all spring, but I would really direct your attention to an interview he did with Alex Anthopoulos. I'm going to be kind of riffing off that interview in my Monday column just after I get off the air here. A fascinating discussion with Alex Anthopoulos about how the Blue Jays are sort of reexamining their approach to pitcher workloads. And you know, and that's going to be a story you're going to hear all year, because this team is very much now about young pitching. So I would direct your attention to the sportsnet.ca website and take a look at the article. I'm actually, during a break here, I'm going to capture it and send out a link to it you guys can read it. Or actually, maybe Travis, you could even do that now as well. Send out a link to Shai's story. The Toronto Raptors play the Houston Rockets tonight at the Air Canada Center. And boy, the Rockets are. Yeah, how do you begin to describe the Rockets? They've got James Harden, who got to be a candidate for MVP. I know Russell Westbrook's getting a lot of love. I think Steve Kerr of the Golden State Warriors sort of deemed Russell Westbrook the MVP of the league this weekend in an interview. They've got Dwight Howard back. And there's one thing about this team that the more you look into the Houston Rockets, the more you kind of dig behind things, the more you come up with factors that show you just how strong this team is. Beyond the obvious, beyond any team that has James Harden is going to be strong. If you look at their bench, it's become one of the best benches in the NBA since the end of December. When they acquired Corey Brewer and Josh Smith, their pace, their point pace, their pace factor is first among all bench units in the NBA. They 100.36 pace factor. There's a lot more to this team than simply James Harden, Dwight Howard. Matt Devlin is our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. You can follow him on Twitter at @Matt_Devlin. Of course, the Raps clinched the Atlantic Division title on Friday with a 94-83 win over the Lakers. Houston Rockets and Dwight Howard going to be a little bit more difficult of a test, I would think, than the LA Lakers. Matt, how you doing?
Doing great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm really looking forward to this game tonight. I mean, the Rockets are one of those headline teams in the NBA. And Matt, there's a lot to this team beyond simply James Harden, isn't there?
Well, there is. And, you know, my understanding is that Dwight Howard may not play tonight based upon the fact that it's the second night of a back-to-back. He was working on limited minutes yesterday against Washington. From watching the game yesterday and from what I recall, the comments of Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy was that he may not play today. And then also they're waiting to hear what they're going to do with Patrick Beverley, who, of course, is the starting point guard. And so you go back to the trade deadline. They're able to bring in Pablo Prigioni from the New York Knicks, and that certainly is significant for them. But it's, you know, you mentioned Harden as, you know, the MVP, potential MVP. And, you know, in my book, he is. They're second right now in the Western Conference. They did not miss a beat. They did not miss a beat with Dwight Howard going out. And I understand everything that Russell Westbrook is doing, and I understand everything that Steph Curry has done. And I'd also add that I think you have to put Kevin McHale into the conversation for Coach of the Year.
Yep.
Because he's been able to deal with Dwight Howard in and out of the lineup. Yes, you have Harden. But to your point, you know, they've brought in players to fill gaps on their bench, and it's not as if they're superstar players. The one move that they made that I really like was the Trevor Ariza move, and I think that was certainly a benefit to them, you know, during last offseason.
In conversation with Matt Devlin on the Jeff Blair Show. Yet, if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to find the numbers here. I think the Raptors have won like 7 or 8, or I'm going to look it up here. They've won 7 consecutive at the Air Canada Center against Houston. They do play this team well at home.
Well, here's the thing, and I go back to playing them right after the All-Star break. The Raptors went in Atlanta 105-80. They traveled to Houston. That game was very sloppy in the first half, both teams turning it over. And really, I think that the Raptors had an opportunity that night. If they were the first team to kind of buckle it down, slow down the pace a little bit, they would have had an opportunity. But they did a great job. James Johnson did a great job on James Harden. But that game continued to have a lot of flow to it, up and down, turnovers, and it played right into the hands of the Rockets. And I remember specifically a play in the third where Harden, James Johnson doubled off of him. He looked back out. They swung it. Harden hit a big three, and he looked over at Dwayne Casey like, okay, I knew I should not have left him. And then Harden got on a roll And, you know, that was kind of the beginning for the Raptors to really, you know, where they are now, where it's been, you know, up and down, up and down, up and down. And so I don't put too much stock in. They've won 7 in a row here, other, you know, because the Rockets right now, you look at their road record, you know, they're one of the best teams in the NBA on the road this year. So I think a different time for the Rockets than maybe a Rocket team of years past where, you know, they had a lot of flow. They weren't playing as much defense. You know, this is a Rockets team that, you know, has tightened things up defensively.
Yeah, if you look at this team, and I think now this is going into Sunday's game against Washington, which they won. They were fourth in the league in defensive rating. I mean, James Harden was fourth in steals. Trevor Ariza was fifth. They're fourth in the NBA in steals per game. They really, as I said, there's a lot to this team, and they're going to be a handful in the playoffs, especially if Dwight Howard is gradually worked back into the lineup. They're going to be a real handful, aren't they?
They are, and here's the interesting thing. You know, Dwight Howard, you know, coming back in, and he hasn't been healthy for a while. He wasn't healthy the year in L.A. with his back, and, you know, of course, now it's his second year in Houston. But, you know, I think his mindset is, you know what, James, you go ahead. You do what you need to do from an offensive standpoint. I'm going to get rebounds, and I'm going to be a defensive force. And if he's that ultimate rim protector, then watch out, because in the playoffs, he had a great first round last year against Portland, was one of their best players on the court. That's what you need. You got somebody like Harden. You have those other players that have, you know, filled in well, including obviously Trevor Ariza, and now all of a sudden you have Dwight Howard on the back end of your defense, and they're going to be tough out.
This Rockets team, looking at how they are constructed, they've got three draft picks. They've been largely put together by trades and by free agency. And I think Daryl Morey gets a lot of grief every now and then around the NBA, but he's also done a nice job, hasn't he? And he and Kevin McHale kind of, they seem to have a good working relationship.
Well, I think it's too, you know, Kevin is the ultimate communicator, you know, while Daryl, you know, does a great job, obviously, of looking. Look at the second round picks, the undrafted free agents that he finds, because he's able to do that. Look, the deal that really saved, you know, what he wanted and what he envisioned there was the James Harden deal.
Yeah.
And that's a deal that has come back to hurt, obviously, Sam Presti in Oklahoma City, the fact that they didn't amnesty Kendrick Perkins, and go ahead and pay, you know, Harden the max deal. They decided not to go in that direction, and, you know, Harden has exploded there. And talking to Kevin McHale when I was down in Houston, he talked about how his relationship with James Harden has really grown, and, you know, the importance of that in today's NBA, you know, to have that relationship with your top player, and he has that. And then, you know, also from a working environment of allowing, you know, Kevin to do what he, you know, needs to do. And it's, you know, it's a simple kind of structure. You know, you have a big man in the middle. You fill shooters around him. It's what we've seen in San Antonio. It's what we've seen in Orlando. It's what Stan Van Gundy's attempting to do in Detroit. And when you have that big man in the middle, it certainly changes what you're able to do offensively as well as defensively. But they can also play small if you need them to, or if they need to.
Now, Matt, what are you expecting from the Raptors tonight in terms of, for example, Kyle Lowry? Are we in another situation where we're just going to have to wait, or do you think that they're just going to let Kyle's going to call the ball here?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, number one, I think the sense is that you need him to be healthy, but there are only 9 games left, and you need him healthy, obviously, in the playoffs if you want to do anything in the playoffs as far as thinking about winning that first round going into the second round. So I think that they're going to be conservative with him, and that's understandable, and making sure that he is ready to come back. And then as far as the team, I think that this is a team that, you know, they kept on saying, hey, if we get one and we feel good about ourselves, it's going to lead to more games. And, well, they got their one against the Lakers. The Lakers gave them a tough time until that second half. So I'm intrigued to see, you know, is this a cohesive unit defensively, you know, on the court tonight? And then also from a defensive standpoint, I think, you know, congratulations to, you know, Dwayne Casey and the players. They won their second consecutive Atlantic Division. We understand what the Atlantic Division is, but still you got to go out and play 82.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, it was long decided when they started 24-7 that they were going to win it, but they did it. And now I think the feeling is, you know, externally as well as internally, hey, you know, are we going to see, you know, the Raptors start to play consistently and see them play what people believe is going to be able to translate to playoff basketball, right? I mean, I think that's what the angst has been about. You know, are you seeing what you believe is going to translate to playoff basketball? And so now ultimately is that time. You only have three home games left, tonight, Saturday, and then the final game. The rest are all out on the road, you know, so I think now's the time for some consistency to see what they're going to be able to do defensively and see if it starts to translate.
Mr. Devlin, it was good of you to do this. I will see you tonight at the ACC.
It's always a pleasure, Jeff. Look forward to seeing you there.
Matt Devlin is the Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet. As the Raptors get ready to play the Houston Rockets tonight at the Air Canada Center. The Raptors, of course, clinching the Atlantic Division title on Friday with a 94-83 win over the LA Lakers. And Houston Rockets, one of the marquee teams, and James Harden, clearly one of the marquee players in the NBA as well. Should be a lot of fun tonight. Should be a good test for the Raptors. If you heard my crossover with Dean Blundell and Co. and Company this morning, you heard me discuss an Outside the Lines feature on ESPN about the safety of hockey helmets, citing a study of 32 on-the-market hockey helmets by Dr. Stefan Duma, who's the Harry C. Wyatt Professor and head the Virginia Tech and Wake Forest University School of Biomedical Engineering and Sciences. These are guys who essentially study equipment, sports equipment, why it functions the way it does, why it doesn't function the way it does, why it isn't as safe as it should be. This program is responsible for a seismic change in football helmets. It's a controversial program. One football helmet manufacturer was put out of business because it scored poorly on these tests. Hockey helmets do not come out well. 32 on-the-market helmets were tested for their ability to reduce concussion risk. This program gives out star ratings for helmets, 5 being the top, 0 being the bottom. Only one helmet received as high as a 3-star rating. 9 received 0, which means they are, quote, not recommended for use. Obviously, it's a study of significant importance to parents in this country. It's also, frankly, a study of significant importance to hockey equipment manufacturers. Dr. Stefan Duma, who led this study, will join the Jeff Blair Show when we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I know you deceived me, now here's a surprise.
All right, we are back. Don't forget, by the way, today from 1 to 4, Brady and Walker return to the airwaves on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and on Sportsnet 360. say they go from 1-4, Brady and Walker, their first day back on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 360. ESPN Outside the Lines. Had an interesting segment recently on the safety of hockey helmets. Now, like a lot of you, I just assumed that, you know, hockey helmets, they got the CSA stamp of approval on them. Everything's good. Nobody would put out a hockey helmet that didn't keep Junior's noggin safe. I mean, we just kind of assumed that. Dr. Stefan Duma is the Harry C. Wyatt Professor and head of Virginia Tech Wake Forest University School of Biomedical Engineering and Sciences. His study was featured on Outside the Lines. It's a study of 32 on-the-market hockey helmets and their ability to reduce concussion risk. Now, this study and this format has been used in the past on football helmets, and it resulted in real substantive change to football helmets. There's a 5-star rating given to the helmets. Only one of those helmets received a rating as high as 3 stars. 9 received 0 stars and were thus, quote, not recommended for use. My first reaction to this, of course, was where the hell was this type of study being done in Canada? And maybe it has been. We do know that we have a Canadian safety, safety standards, a Canadian Safety Association. I mean, we've got all these government bodies. But I think there's also, frankly, there's an element of trust here. There's an element of assumed trust with the equipment manufacturer on the part of hockey players, and indeed on the part of hockey parents. So this is a... it's an interesting study. It's puzzling to me because, as I said, I understand what free enterprise is all about. And I firmly believe that, the profit motive sometimes overrides all other concerns. But when I see a rating system that essentially shows me that more than a quarter of the helmets that were studied would be not recommended, well, it's got to create some questions. Dr. Stefan Duma is the Harry C. Wyatt Professor and head Virginia Tech Wake Forest University School of Biomedical Engineering and Sciences. It is his study that was featured in Outside the Lines, and Dr. Duma joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Dr. Duma, thanks so much for doing this. A fascinating study, and I guess my first question is, what was the response from the equipment manufacturers? Because like a lot of parents, like a lot of players, look, I understand there are risks playing hockey. I understand I can never be completely safe and prevented from having a concussion. But I assume they were safer than what your study appears to show.
Right. Well, I think one important distinction is that the current standards are focused on skull fracture and serious brain injury. And to that extent, they all do a very good job. They pass the standards. But what we're looking at is the next level, which is concussion. So the mild brain injury that's really become the focus of sports now. And that's where we're seeing the opportunity for improvement in the helmets.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of us would just assume that the equipment manufacturers, Dr. Duma, would look at this and go, okay, well, let's not back to the drawing board, but let's see what we can do about it. Is it your sense that this study is going to be taken seriously?
I think so. We've spent the past 3 years developing this system. We've spent about the past year working with manufacturers, so they're well aware of what we're doing. We've had open meetings here at Virginia Tech, and we've showed our equipment, showed our process. And I do think the manufacturers are going to take this, which is a new system, and use it to design their next-generation helmets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we saw with football. When we first released our ratings in 2011, there was only one five-star helmet. Now there's 12 five-star helmets by all the major manufacturers. So we're hopeful that in a very quick time frame, we'll see the four- and five-star ratings be populated with a range of helmet options for people to buy.
Were you surprised by this result?
Personally, I was not surprised. If you look at the helmets, they're basically what you would call a small offset. So there's simply not that much padding, and you can only do so much in a limited amount of space.
Mm-hmm.
So I think most people that have tested helmets and understand how you manage the energy are very understanding that this is sort of how they would come out.
In conversation with Dr. Stefan Duma, he is the Harry C. Wyatt Professor and Head Virginia Tech Wake Forest University School of Biomedical Engineering and Sciences. Dr. Duma, what is your, what do you think is the maximum, I don't want to say maximum amount of protection, I don't know if you could measure that, but what is the minimum we should expect? Not in terms of star rating, but the minimum we should expect from hockey helmets, bike helmets, football helmets. I mean, I know it's a different, they're different sports and they're different pastimes and all that, but what is the minimum we as parents should expect that we are getting when we purchase one of those helmets?
Well, the minimum is going to be protection against skull fractures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's historically what the standards have been focused on. And quite honestly, they've done a very good job at that. You don't really see skull fractures. You don't see traumatic brain injury like you used to see 30 years ago. So that's where the organizations have done good. And I think as a minimum, that's what you're getting when you buy a helmet.
Doctor,
but currently...
Go ahead. Yep.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say currently, the concussion injury has become very, very much the focus. And if you want to prevent some of those, now we're never going to prevent all of them, but if you want to reduce your risk, you need to lower head acceleration, and that's what you're going to see if you have a four- and a five-star helmet. Those helmets are going to really lower the head acceleration for the same given impacts.
As far as you know, have there been similar studies done in Canada on this scale?
Not the way we're doing it. But certainly at the University of Ottawa, Blaine Hushizaki mm-hmm. has done a lot of very good work with helmets, and we actually reference a lot of his papers. And his papers, which are formulated a little differently, basically show the same thing that we're showing, which is all the hockey helmets generally perform the same level, and there is room for improvement in terms of reducing acceleration.
One of the things I really found interesting here is this study, and this is why I tend to put a lot into it, a lot of credence into it. There was no funding from hockey equipment manufacturers for this study, and quite often we know that the equipment manufacturers will fund studies. Has there been any, is there any chance, do you think, that they will come on board now with you and maybe, instead of taking this as a slap in the face, look at it as an opportunity to perhaps improve their product?
I think that's going to happen. And we are very careful to include the manufacturers in this process. I mentioned we had meetings.
Mm-hmm.
They've all been here. They know how we're testing. And I know that they're making newer products to perform well. I think you're going to see the same thing that we saw with football.
Right.
You're going to see a few companies adapt to it very quickly. And it's going to be a way for them to capture market share. If you can come out with a high-performing helmet, people are going to want to buy it.
Sure.
And I think that's going to help drive hockey sales, just as we saw with football. And now you have basically everyone making five-star helmets, much like the auto safety analogy. Ford doesn't come out and make a two-star car because no one's going to buy it.
How much of an issue do you think in, I'm going to say in the past, maybe the past 10 years, but the merging or the combining of different equipment companies, especially in hockey. I mean, I grew up in an era where there seemed to be five, six, seven different equipment manufacturers. Well, now there's there's a lot of them are under the same umbrella. There's different brand names, but there seems to have been a centralization that has occurred. Has that been a good or bad thing in general for equipment safety? The fact that there has been this almost conglomeration of equipment.
I'm not really sure what effect that's had. It's similar in football. You only have basically a few major manufacturers. But in general, just regardless of the company, the offset, the size of the helmet, and the protection, they're all pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few that are different and a few that, you know, work their way up and do better in our ratings now. But the bulk of the helmets all perform basically the same.
Dr. Doom, it was great of you to join us today. It's a fascinating study, and I think on behalf of a lot of parents, I just tell you, keep at it. We need people doing these studies.
Thank you very much.
It's Dr. Stephan Duma. He is the Harry C. Wyatt Professor and Head, Virginia Tech and Wake Forest University School of Biomedical Engineering and Sciences. And again, this was an Outside the Lines documentary, a terrific report put together by our friend Steve Faneru. 32 on-the-market hockey helmets were tested for their ability to reduce concussion risk. Now, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest University, they use a 5-star rating system. And this was a system that was used to great effect with football helmet manufacturers. A 5-star rating system is used. Only one hockey helmet received as high as a 3-star rating. 9 received 0 stars and thus fell into the not recommended for use category. Again, it is a terrific piece of work, and I take heart from the fact that it appears as if the hockey equipment manufacturers, the sports equipment manufacturers, aren't simply turning their noses up at this particular study. I mean, obviously, there's an initial sort of public relations reaction where you try to just, you know, boilerplate things and spin things, but ultimately, we're talking about not just the safety of adult hockey players. We're talking about the safety of kids as well. So, and I think Dr. Doom is right. The company that takes the biggest steps forward in addressing this issue could very well be the company that gets greater market share. In other words, now that this study is out there, combined with similar studies at the University of Ottawa, if parents make a conscious, and hockey players make a conscious decision to buy the safer helmet, thus giving that company, that particular helmet, a larger part of market share, clearly pressure, you would think, pressure would be put on other manufacturers and other helmets to come up to that standard. We appreciate Dr. Duma joining us. Time to talk a little baseball. We had Shai Davidi on earlier. Jonah Carey is author of Up, Up, and Away, The Kid, The Hawk, Rock, Vladdy, Pedro Le Grand Orange, Yuppie, The Crazy Business of Baseball, and The Ill-Fated But Unforgettable Montreal Expos. The book has been out in hardcover. It was a bestseller. It is now available in softcover. Jonah Carey will be in conversation with Andrew Stoughton tonight at Opera Bob's. And Jonah Carey will join us in studio for the full hour to take your calls when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.